Hi everyone, this is Klaatu. I'm the last day of Ohio Linux Fest, and I'm sitting down with Jared Smith, the current project leader of Fedora. Hey Jared, how are you doing?
I'm doing alright, how are you doing?
Pretty good. Fedora 15 is looking really, really nice with GNOME 3. What kind of feedback have you been getting on that, and what do you think of it?
I think the Fedora 15 release was a good, solid release. Obviously, like any release, when you change some things, that there's some pushback, and there's some, there's some people that like the changes, and some people that don't like the changes, and there's some things that need a little polish and cleanup. And so we're working on Fedora 16 right now, and obviously on the GNOME front, it'll have GNOME 3.2. which will have some of the newer features and some of the features that they just didn't have done in time for GNOME 3.0. But we're working on a number of other things as well to make it a good solid release. But overall, I'm very happy with the way that Fedora 15 turned out.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I've been playing around with I run the KDE version on my laptop, but I've been playing around with the GNOME version. I mean, I have to say that one of the things that I sometimes keep saying is that GNOME 3 kind of out OS 10, the latest OS 10 release, because I saw literally Fedora 15 GNOME 3 and I was like, wow, this is really nice. And then my school got a new OS 10 computer with Lion on it, and I was like, that's it? It just felt like really, like, not,
yeah, the,
big, you know? It was like
the GNOME 3 release obviously had a lot of polish to it. It looked really slick.
Yeah.
You know, functionality-wise, there's a few things that we're missing from it, and I think the GNOME team is working hard on that for GNOME 3.2. But overall, it's a very usable desktop. It's different than GNOME 2, obviously, and so
right.
We have to set that expectation appropriately,
mm-hmm.
that if people are expecting this to be like GNOME 2, it's not.
Yeah.
But if you take the time to get used to it and play around, I find it very easy to get around in GNOME 3. The keyboard shortcuts make it a huge time saver for me.
That's cool.
It's unobtrusive. It stays out of your way.
Nice.
Doesn't distract you with a lot of things blinking in the taskbar and those sorts of
things.
I quite like it.
So I don't actually, I mean, I know it's been fairly recent, I think, but I mean, how long have you been the project leader now?
I've been the project leader since July of last year, so a little over a year now.
Oh, okay. All right. What exactly, and I probably have asked Paul this before, probably people have asked Max that before, but what does a project leader do? Like, what do you do as the project manager or whatever?
The project leader is an interesting role because you're ultimately responsible for everything that happens in Fedora.
Right.
At the same time, you don't have a whole lot of power to direct people. You don't have people reporting to you. You don't
right.
have, you can't just go out and say, this is what we're going to do and now go do it. Really, it's a role trying to lead the community through communication and increasing the communication within our community. We work hard to try to do coordination between the different groups, whether they're special interest groups or release engineering or the engineering steering committee or the ambassador steering committee or design or documentation or translation,
right.
all those sorts of things. It's getting those pieces communicating and working together, and it's keeping on schedule. And then it's also dealing with personnel issues, conflicts, trying to help make sure that...
You mean there are personality conflicts in open source?
There are personality conflicts. Anytime you get a bunch of smart people together, you're going to have differences of opinion, and you're going to have people with less than perfect social skills. And yes, there are conflicts, but we do our best to try to resolve those in an amicable manner and try to keep focused on what's right, not necessarily who's right. And I think that's important.
What do you see as the method of communication? Like, what's the answer to that? Like, how is improving communication done in your view so far?
There's several things you can do. First of all, it's helping the people get to know each other outside of just a mailing list or an IRC channel.
Uh-huh.
I found that when you're arguing technical details with someone over something like IRC or mailing list, it's not always ideal conditions for getting to, establish some sort of a relationship of trust with that other person.
Yeah.
And sometimes getting to know that person either in an in-face setting or in a wideband setting really helps that. Sometimes it's as simple as a phone call. There's inflection. There's things you get from either an in-face conversation with someone or a phone conversation with someone that you don't get over IRC. That being said, it's not always easy to get all the people in the same physical location.
Sure.
And so there's other things that we're doing within the Fedora community to try to increase the signal-to-noise ratio, so to speak, on things like IRC or mailing lists. We put in place over the past year a code of conduct, which should be self-explanatory, but a set of guidelines. These are the sorts of things we expect from people participating in the project. Treat each other civilly, ask questions, those sorts of things.
Give the benefit of the doubt.
Give the benefit
kind
of the doubt.
Yeah.
Don't question other people's motives.
Yeah.
Those sorts of things that help facilitate communications.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is just making sure that everybody understands that we want the communication in Fedora. We want people to be able to voice their opinion, but we want them to do it in a specific manner. We want meetings to be transparent and open. We want it to be clear when decisions are made. Who made the decision? Why was it made? What was the data leading up to that decision? Those sorts of things.
I mean, that's always been one of the things that I really, really like about Fedora. It's like whenever a decision is made, it always feels like it is a community decision. I mean, I know there's always going to be a minority and a majority of people on one side of an issue, but it's always, in contrast to other distributions that I might not mention, it seems like Fedora really, really gives the community, or it is built from the community.
We really try to have that transparency in everything we do. Now that means that sometimes it's not the most efficient way possible to make a decision, and sometimes it takes entirely too long to make a decision. But I would personally rather err on the side of taking a little bit longer, taking a little bit more time to get community input, rather than just making a quick decision. But it's always that balancing act. We could debate a topic for years and years and never come to a consensus,
right,
but we always try to make sure that people that are interested and are following along have the chance to make their opinion known before a decision gets.
One of the things that, I mean, I know I'm really, really guilty of is that something will go up for a vote, literally a vote, then you can go to the site and you can vote on something. And, I put it off, and then it ends and it gets voted on. And I'm like, well, it kind of underscores the idea that if you don't participate, your voice isn't heard. So
right.
I remember it's gotten a lot easier logistically to sign up to be a part of the Fedora community. You upload your SSH key, public key, stuff like that. What about just drawing new people, even more new people, into being really a part of the process rather than just kind of being users?
Yeah, well, that's something we focused a lot on over the past year. Obviously, even signing up to be a member of the Fedora project, you no longer have to generate a public key and upload that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Our websites team, late last year and early this year, spent a lot of time revamping the Fedora project. .org website to make it really appeal to people who don't know what Fedora is and are really starting out. What is Fedora? How do I get started? How do I figure out where within Fedora I fit? Am I a people person? Do I want to become an ambassador? Am I a writer? I want to become part of the documentation team. Am I going to be a packager? Am I a technical person? Trying to help those people get their first steps within the community. Obviously, we have more steps to do. One of my focuses for this next upcoming year is to increase mentorship within the project. Help people think about, it's not just about who we have in the project here today, but how can we take the people who are kind of on the outskirts of the project, who would be willing to help and want to help and have that ambition to help, but they just need to get up to speed in the tools and the techniques and the workflows and the process.
So if you know you're a good writer and you know you can communicate well, but you don't know Publican, then maybe there's maybe you don't have to wait until you teach yourself Publican.
Exactly.
Probably.
And unfortunately, I've seen so many people, you talk about the doc side of things, so many people come in and say, hey, I want to be a writer. And we say, yeah, start writing. And they're like, well, I don't understand the tools and I don't understand DocBook and XML and those sort of things. And my answer is always, don't worry about that. Don't worry about the mechanics. Just go write in the text editor. Don't let the tools and the process get
That's
in the
cool.
way of your contribution. We'll help you with the tagging and the conversion and those sorts of things.
Well, I don't think that's a typically expected answer.
Right.
I would not expect that if I went into Fedora IRC and said that. I don't think that's what I would expect.
And
so that's nice.
So there's things like that we can do to help people say, just dive in and start, do your best.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be perfect. We're not going to mock you for trying, but go in and do something, and then we'll help you get up to speed in the tools and the processes and the workflow.
Very cool. Okay, well, so stepping back, how did you get involved with Fedora yourself? What's your background?
Well, I've been a long-time Linux user. I started with Red Hat 4.2 and using Linux for ever since. When Fedora got started, I was always a user of Fedora. I was always a member of the test list, and whenever a beta would come out, I would download and install it and try it out and try to help triage bugs and that sort of thing. But I didn't really take an active role in being a contributor to Fedora until about the Fedora 6 time frame, right around there. And that's when I really got it. I was doing some writing and doc book for other things, and so I joined the Fedora Docs project. And that's how I got my start. I write some things, and more than writing, I was doing a lot of helping with the tools and conversions and kind of the back-end dirty work that needs to be done but isn't always out there in public limelight. So I helped out with that. And then a couple of years ago, because of some of the voiceover IP work I was doing, I helped set up a voiceover IP server within Fedora called Fedora Talk.
Fedora Talk, is that you?
So I used to use that for,
I would go into those rooms and use them for quick interviews with people. Like mm-hmm. I would record the call.
So Jeff Ollie and I went to
cool. set that up. You know, thanks. It's gone now.
It's gone now, unfortunately. Yeah. But that was something, you know, we both worked on and helped set up. And about that time, I started paying more attention. When Paul Friels became the Fedora project leader, he was in my local LUG.
We were good friends.
So we started talking a lot more about the mechanics of what happens inside of Fedora, and I started attending more FUDCons and that sort of thing, and really became a Fedora contributor more than just an end user. I take my experience of being, you know, kind of a user, slowly became a contributor, slowly got more up to speed in what was happening and wanted to contribute more, and I think other people should have that same sort of experience.
Yeah.
It's always exciting to me to see people go through that same transition.
Yeah. For me, and you probably felt the same way when you were doing it, I mean, like, when you start getting more involved with the project, and you realize that you can be more than just a user, and you're like, wow, you mean I can really actually make a difference in the software that I use anyway and love anyway, and yet I'm also now, like, you know, you feel like you are building it even though you're not like a programmer. It feels cool.
I'm not responsible for every single bit and byte that goes out
right,
on the CD,
but at
the same time, I have a chance to make a difference in the world.
It's very
rewarding.
It's crazy. Can you tell me a little bit about FUDCon? What is it? Where does it happen? Why does it happen?
Sure. So FUDCon is the Fedora Users and Developers Conference. It's kind of a name on the FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. But we have a FUDCon 4 times a year. So once each year in North America, once in Latin America, once in Europe, Middle East, Africa area, and once in the Asia Pacific region. So we've got several FUDCons coming up. And the next one is in Milan, Italy, in the beginning of October. So that'll cover our European region. We've got one coming up in November in Pune, India. So that covers our Asia Pacific region. And then our North American FUDCon is coming up the middle of January, the 13th through the 15th of January in Blacksburg, Virginia, on the Virginia Tech campus.
Oh, cool. Okay. What happens there? Is it just basically like a Linux Fest, or it's got to be more of a planning thing, right?
It's a little bit of everything. Usually the FUDCon has about half of it is a bar camp style. Talks. People show up the first day, they present, they stand up and propose, say, I want to do a presentation on documentation, or I want to do a presentation on packaging, or I want to do a presentation on robots, or, you know, whatever they're passionate about. And then we vote on those in bar camp sessions about the things that people want to hear about. The other half of FUDCon is usually a set of hack fests and planning meetings, and people who are passionate about a particular topic get together and say, hey, what can we do to make things better for the next 6 months or the next year or the next release? And then there's a lot of informal meetings as well. People getting together with people, you know, that they've chatted with on IRC or emailed back and forth,
but
getting to know people better and having a good time. We usually have an event we call FUD Pub, which is usually a dinner and drinks and get together and, you know, sometimes shoot pool or go bowling or things like that, just to build those social relationships as well.
Yeah, well, like you say, which is important, so that the next time you think something is a horrible idea, you don't end up flaming the person, because, it's a real person.
It's a real person.
Yeah. Very cool. I'm going to probably try to get down to the one this January in Virginia. Last but not least, what's upcoming in the next release? What are the big exciting ideas they've got? I mean, I know 16 is just an alpha right now, so it might be pretty early, but...
Well, we still have a pretty good idea of new features going into Fedora 16. On the kind of desktop front, updated version of GNOME, we'll have the GNOME 3.2 stack, but updated version of KDE as well.
Sure.
So we, you know, try to keep track of the desktops there.
Yeah.
From kind of the internal plumbing kind of stuff, with Fedora 15, we went to the systemd initialization system, but we were using it in kind of compatibility mode, where it was still using system 5 style initialization scripts.
Okay.
We slowly started moving all those initialization scripts over to being native systemd.
So I have a quick question about that, I guess.
I mean,
is that going to change the way on the rel boxes it work? That I like if that was to, well, I guess it wouldn't change anything on RHEL because that's not switching to systemd but let's say I have a Fedora server or something, would that change the way that I would like start and stop services and stuff, or is it
you can still use it if you're used to saying like service
such and
HTTP
such
start. You can still do that,
and check config is still
check
valid.
Config is still valid, but you can actually use the native systemd tools to get a little more fine-grained control of that. One example is in the system 5 initialization system that we were using before, you had run level 3 and you had run level 5.
Yeah, right.
With systemd, you have a much more flexibility. You can say, I have a network target, I have a graphical target, and you can define your own targets and saying these targets have dependencies on these particular services.
Okay,
and so instead of just numbering them to get them to come up in order, or saying, you know, these static run levels, we can actually have targets that are very flexible.
That's pretty cool.
And instead of saying, oh, they have to come up in this set order, they can say, hey, this one depends on this one. And so it's dependency, it's really dependency resolution,
that's
kind of like we do
cool.
with packages, but with our startup scripts.
That's amazing. Sort
of there's lots of other interesting things you can do with systemd, but it's probably a little more advanced.
Right.
If you want to dive into a quick interview there.
That sounds really exciting. Uh-huh. And thanks for talking to me. It was good to meet you in person.
You too. Thank you.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.